So this is week three, and it's interesting. Yesterday, I had the privilege of being with about 50 men who are part of another church, a much larger church in another community, and we spent the day from sunrise literally to 9 o'clock last night as they're trying to lead through a new season for their outpost, realizing that. And there's a couple ways I could go with this, but I was just thinking, I've shared this with a couple of you this over the last week or so, but think about this. How many of you at Christmas time actually went to a store to find Christmas presents? Was there a lot of that? How many really, if you think about it, spent most of your time surfing Amazon Prime and just having to drop ship to your house? Yeah, John's like, yep. And so it was interesting as we talked about the season of life that we find ourselves in, which is amazing because my daughter lives, we actually celebrated Emma, our youngest daughter's birthday Thursday night in Columbus. And our daughter Sarah lives there and she was just sharing with us. Now, if you live in Columbus and you order on Amazon Prime, if you order by noon, you'll have it by 2 o'clock the same day. Now, think about that. I mean, who would want to go shopping? And actually, it's interesting over in Ashland, there's a little grocery store out by where my dad grew up, Nankin, this little burg, Gerg's White Barn. They actually now are almost selling as much online where they actually have the kids go through their stock boys, pick out the order, and all you do is show up and they load it in your car. You don't even have to go, and there's no real extra cost for that. So the reason I share that is that as we think about as a church, and this morning I want to have sort of a, you know, as we're thinking about our annual meeting and just thinking about the year that's passed, also thinking about, you know, what is our future? And so even this series that we're in on singing is really sort of the impetus of that. I could have, as most churches do this time of year, if you remember last year, we leaned through a series on habits, the idea of what are the spiritual practices that we should have in our daily journey. And you'll know I keep pushing you, you know, to say, are you reading your Bible? Are you working through your Bible plan? And I was reminded even this week as I'm pushing through almost actually this morning, I finished Genesis chapter 50. So I've read through the entire book of Genesis, which is like that to me is like, I can't believe I've done this. But what's interesting in doing that is I was reminded in the story of Joseph, and you're going to hear me say this many more times because I think it's really where we are as individually and where we are corporately and even where the church large is at. As I sat with these men who are doing some amazing things, but they're realizing that the culture and the time we're living in is really in a different place. And so there's a story, and I just don't think it's by accident that you brought that Sheila brought the staff, the production folks from the whole cast from Joseph's amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, because I've been sitting in this story and to reread it again. But in Genesis chapter 41, there's the conversation with Pharaoh has this dream. He's trying to figure out how to interpret it. And in the interpretation, they say to him, get it, it's like, well, there's this dude you got locked up in prison. If you bring him out, maybe he can help you understand it. And what's interesting is you lean into it, the story, it's interesting that, and I just love the way God's word, so it's always the details. So it's interesting as Pharaoh sends for Joseph, there's a sentence there that actually says that before Joseph went to Pharaoh, he went home and shaved and put on better clothes because he'd been in prison for a while. It probably smelled, you know, probably because you can get that in your mind. But when he got in front of Pharaoh, Pharaoh says to him, look, this is the Repke paraphrase. Basically, I understand you can interpret my dream. And to which Joseph's response is this. He looks at Pharaoh, I'm guessing, and says, I cannot. Now, you got to think about that for just a moment. There's more to the sentence, but think about that in the moment. Pharaoh has just rescued you. You know the reason why. You've been in prison. And so what's coming out of this is that the idea that maybe you've got freedom. And then Pharaoh says, this is what I want you to do. And Joseph says, I can't do that. And then the rest of the sentence is where Joseph says to Pharaoh, but God can. And so I think there's words for that individually where we find ourselves this morning, whatever we're pushing through, as you skated in literally from the parking lot almost, doing the little shuffle, or as you push through whatever you pushed through yesterday or what you're going to push through this afternoon, to be reminded that in so many of these things, we really don't control anything. And so there isn't much we can do, but we can depend upon God. And so the reason why we're in this series on singing is basically to look at what worship ought to be And what we as a church, together, as we figure out what this looks like going into our community, when you realize that the things that we've always depended upon, really, we can't depend upon them anymore. When you think about the great stories that I can remember as a kid, that when I went Christmas shopping with my parents, none of those stores exist anymore. The Reeds, or the Bears Jewelry in Ashland, or the Gilbert's Furniture Store, you know, the places where we sort of depend upon, and that creates, you know, it creates angst because where do we go? But many of us, as we sort of talk about, you know, just Christmas as a for instance, we've sort of accustomed ourselves to that. Now, we could spend a lot of time thinking about what was, but I think in the tension, and follow me with this, so get out your worship notes, and let's just start thinking about this. First of all, let's just have some fun. So if you could have dinner with anybody that's a musician, who would you like to have? Who would that one musician be? Is it somebody contemporary, or is it, I mean, I think it's interesting this week that Elton John, I don't know if you saw, he had a big press conference because he's not going to tour anymore. He realizes he just at age 70, which, like, okay. I remember junior high with Elton John, so it's like, okay, I guess I'm maturing. But he's just says, I can't do it anymore. And so he's given it up and going to, and it was interesting that in his life, and we can talk about his story a little if you wanted to, but not really, he's going to spend time with family. As a 70-year-old man, he's going to spend time with what he thinks is the most important thing, which is like, okay, that's kind of cool. Literally, but he'll fill millions of people through the venues he's got left in his tour. But for you, what's that one musician you would love to have a meal with? Sheila.
John Williams.
John Williams. So Superman, Star Wars, all those great soundtracks. Yeah, it's like, how do you keep cranking that stuff out? You know, there's just beauty in that. Sheila, or I'm Kathy. Keith Green. Do any of you know who Keith Green is, that name? Keith is one of the godfathers of contemporary music. There's an amazing story about how he and his wife, Melody, they owned a ministry in Texas, and Keith was very passionate, and so he actually, when I had hair, I listened to him. he had some great songs, and if you get a moment, in fact, there's ways I want you to think about this by looking at the web. And so it's interesting with Keith's story. He actually was killed in a plane accident with his daughter, one of his kids. And yet his music that he wrote really shaped much of contemporary Christian music today. And I'm talking from like the 70s forward. Anybody else? Jerry?
I've got three.
Okay.
Yanni, Streisand,
and Leon. Dion. God, Dion. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, those are all amazing in their own right in different ways. Anybody else? Walt.
Mozart.
Yeah. Yeah. And Louis Armstrong. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how music shapes us. And as you've heard me say, and we've leaned into this a little bit, is that, you know, we really take a view that all of life is to the glory of God, all those songs and those moments. And as we've thought the last couple of weeks about the songs that move us. And so part of what I'm trying to do is give us some handles. And so this morning I want to dive a little bit deeper talking about the role that music has in our families and why that matters. And so it's interesting, this quote from C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis says this. He says, "I think we delight to praise what we enjoy because the praise not merely expresses, but it completes the enjoyment. It is its appointed consummation." Now think about that for a moment. I mean, in our very day, in our everyday lives, we praise all sorts of people. The musicians we just laid out, the sports teams, well, maybe not the Browns, sorry. Maybe the Steelers, if you're a Steelers fan. The artists we think about, not just musically, but even the paintings and the things that we see in the galleries. And even the idea that the things that we own, the possessions, the things that we value, that gives added life to us. I mean, I think C.S. Lewis says we delight to praise what we enjoy, whatever that might be. And so at the same time, part of what I want us to see as we think about worship, particularly, it's also then we ought to praise that which is the most amazing and the most praiseworthy person in the world, and that's Jesus Christ. to whom we come together as a church each week to celebrate what he's done for us, but then also to take that word to people outside the building. And as I've shared with our session and with others of you as we've talked about this, the culture in which we live today, it's got to be more about what we do outside the building than inside, because people just are not going to church. Now, I was this idea of sort of the first point there in your worship notes is this idea of what the practice of the Puritans were. Because it, coming out of the Reformation, coming out of the 500th anniversary, we need to see what these men and women did. Now, it's interesting. Think about this. And this is actually in our tradition as a Presbyterian church in this community. There was a point that when it came time for communion, unless the men of the church could demonstrate, think about this, that they were leading their homes spiritually, they couldn't take communion. I mean, that to me, you think about that as a bar, if you will. That if they had to be able to demonstrate an examination with each other, that they on a daily basis were leading their families and reading the scriptures, praying together, and singing songs in their home together. Now, that is, I don't know about you, but that, you know, that's a conviction on, it's like, how well am I doing that as the husband in my home? You know, it's because I've always leaned into this idea, as you've heard me say, that nobody really wants to hear my singing voice. Because I don't have a very good singing voice, at least I don't think so. And if I do sing, I don't think anybody wants to join in with me. And the truth is, I in one day could play an instrument. I actually took 8 years of piano lessons, but I don't think I could play anything today of any. It would take me a while to figure out the keyboards. And then the other thing is that with that is, what will we sing? I'm not sure, because maybe what I would want to sing, maybe you wouldn't like, or my family wouldn't like. And so it's interesting that this bar, and literally that's why they call it, so we talk about the bar that you have to approach, and if you read some of the historical books of that time, there was actually given, and I just learned this, Paul Lintern hired an intern, that worked through looking at the 11 old churches in Mansfield, and we're one of those, we're number 7. And it was interesting that they said at one time when this church was established downtown, even before it was in the building, when it was in the blockhouse, they actually had relics that came from Scotland that represented the Scottish tradition of being Presbyterian. As the men would come, they would get to the point of doing communion during the course of the calendar year. The week before, you would actually, as the man of the household, would be called to the church, and you would have to sit with the elders. And you would have to give a demonstration of whether or not you were leading your family correctly. And if you were, then you were given a token. And literally, when you came to the church to do communion, you exchanged that token to have the right to sit at the communion table. Now, we sort of like, that's just crazy. But you can see how if that worked then, and that was our tradition, what is it today that we're doing maybe that creates a disconnect with our community? It doesn't create a disconnect for us because it's what we know. But it creates a disconnect with people who are outside of the church. And it's like, well, they ought to just get their act together. It's like, well, they're not. And if we want to be in relationship with people who are far from Christ, and we know all you have to do is pick up the newspaper and see, or hop on Richmond Source and read about the disconnect in our community, the brokenness, we can see why we are so necessary in our community. Now, it's interesting, the whole idea of music, and I just want to talk about music within the family, but let me just pray first. God, in this time, as we think about your word and how it drills down to the family level and how singing is, as we looked last week, the Psalms are just full of ways for when we're sorrowful and when we're pushing through grief and when we're angry and when we're joyful. But this morning, as we look at our responsibility of what it looks like to have it in our family, our local family and in our church family, God, I just pray you take these words and you encourage us through them. Take what you want people to hear, not by what I've put down on paper, but what it is that you want us as a church, what you want us individually as men and women, and then what you want us corporately to do as we continue to love you and love others with no limits. So God, just come and sit with us now, and we just pray it in your name. And all God's people said, all right. So try this. There was a study that was done in England called The Genius of Natural Childhood. And this author, Sally Blythe, says this: song is a special type of speech. Lullabies, songs, and rhymes of every culture carry the signature melodies and inflections of a mother tongue that prepares the child's ear voice, and brain for language. You see, we found that singing is the best way to teach kids. It was amazing. A few years ago, a long years ago, had a chance before Mona and I had children. A friend of mine got introduced to, ran a very large Christian school in outside of Washington, D.C. in Leesburg. And I went to take a tour of that. And it was amazing to see that these little kindergartners and first graders singing all these, not only did they learn Spanish, I mean, English, Spanish, and Latin. They were singing these songs in Latin. I thought, man, I'm still working on my English as an adult. And what was it? Well, it was this idea that apparently, and I don't know this to be true other than people have told me, but that if you're wanting to teach somebody, the younger you start, the easier it is for them to retain the information. And so that's why downstairs in our children's ministry, we want music to be part of what they're experiencing, because we want them to have the same, you know, handles that we have in the great songs that we know. Now, I'm not suggesting that we return to the practice of the Puritans, the idea of this examination and all that. But I am saying that there's something about the intentionality that they placed on family singing that I want us to ponder a little bit. And so one of the things I've done is, I think it's on the back of your worship notes, we actually have a new website, www.lindenroad.church. And not only can you find the sermons there and the worship notes from the previous messages, but I actually put a page up that I'm going to begin to add some things to. That's just, you just go to lindenroad.church/ and the word sing. And one of the things I put up there just yesterday was a playlist out of this one of these apps on the computer called Spotify that gives you a sense of the different songs that actually are shaping my faith journey. And I want us to and I'm not asking you to say, well, that I don't know that I want to do any of this, but at the same time, I just want you to value what's taking place in the culture around us and trying to help you see and maybe experiment a little bit in understanding why worship matters. Because you see, here's the fundamental thing, and some of us have talked about this at a deeper level, this idea of discipleship. Where does discipleship start? It doesn't start here in the church. It starts in the family. It starts at home. And back to this verse from Deuteronomy. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These words that I am giving you today are to be in your heart. Repeat them to your children. Talk about them when you sit in your house and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up. And so these things are supposed to matter to us. You know, we can't obey this passage and what God's calling us to be unless we're doing that in our home. Now, this is kind of crazy because as Mona and I were talking this morning, and I actually came back last night, and I was just exhausted, but I was just thinking God had laid some things in my heart. How do I talk about this? And so there was this song that I can remember with the children, because music was always in our home, even though neither Melinda and I really can't sing. We don't play any musical instruments. But our house has always had an intercom system. My parents, my home I grew up in, had an intercom system, and it was on a radio station. And when the kids were growing up, it was actually the Moody station out of Cleveland. And on Saturday mornings, they just had this amazing collection of folks like Chip Richter, who you've met a couple times, and Alan Root. But it was weird. The church, at the same time we were raising our kids, they were born. Sarah was 84, Jed was 90, and Emma was 92. I became the lay leader of the church that I grew up in, Ashland First United Methodist. And the folks that were there during my last 7 years in leadership, they were turned on to this kind of music that's like I really struggled with. But it's the Gaithers. Do you know the Gaithers? Does anybody know who the Gaithers are? And I actually drove my kids nuts because there was one particular song, and I tried to find it this morning, but it's on VHS, so I can't share it with you. But I found a version of it that they added to their playlist. But just check this out. Well, I'm jealous of the hair, so just Guy Penrod, you know. But there's something about that song, and where my kids would go nuts is that I would watch that part with them, and then when they went into that, I don't know what you call it, but the sort of when you thought they were done, they came back, and it's like, that's when Dad would grab the air microphone and go for it. Jed just, Dad, stop it. But I mean, think about these words. And it's a modern song. It's not sure that I really would take a steady diet of this. But again, it's that idea, like last week, taking these things into the week. I'm going to sing just as long as it takes for a song to make me sad and have its heavy spirits free. I'm going to keep making music that carries the secret that Jesus is liberty. I'm going to turn off the sounds that would drag people down to the pit of despondency with the sweet, happy tune, "He's coming soon for his children like you and me." It's a song that carries a message along through the densest of foggy nights. And a tune is the rope that can throw a man hope when he's going down for the third time. It's a sweet melody that can cut your heart free from the chains of a past defeat. You can suddenly see through the sweet harmony a path of your wandering feet. Don't tell me the world is a hopeless old place, and I might as well give in to the doom and gloom life's a waiting room for the blow that'll do us all in. I can't sympathize when before my eyes is a shining hope as bright as day. I gotta follow that song that keeps drawing me on with my feet dancing all the way. And so I really appreciate the fact that you clapped with that little reprise, because it's just, I mean, there's something about it in that. And now, like VeggieTales, that song will be in your mind for the rest of the week, probably. And I don't apologize, because you see, here's the points. So that's really the third point in our conversation this morning. Singing at home helps create some things. It, first of all, it creates a culture of singing. Second of all, it's a memorable understanding like I just helped create for you that was deep in me. And I tell you what, I got to be honest, as I found that, I didn't know if I was going to find the song on YouTube. And when I found it this morning, I was wrecked because of the memories it brought back with my children sitting in the front room and how important the music that we offered them, that I actually think is that we sat and celebrated our youngest's birthday, really are those memory hooks that are so important to them in their current faith journey. And then the idea that when we sing at home, it takes the sound of home and brings it to the church. And so part of my encouragement is for us to think about, and I'm not asking you to embrace it all necessarily, but understanding that if we're going to reach a generation that needs to hear the story of Jesus and the liberty that Jesus brings, then we're going to have to be uncomfortable with some things. And that ought to encourage us in that uncomfortableness. Now, I've given you 10 things real quick. I just want to go through some practical ideas for us as church people, as people who go to church on a regular basis. How do we incorporate singing into our lives? So here it is. First of all, we need to use all the help and opportunities you can get. So our website, our Facebook page, those things are huge tools to help you share and to know. And so created a page today that we can add some more information to. It's there to help you connect with others, to say, hey, we're in this series on singing at church, and we heard this crazy song, or there was this vegetarian, whatever. Those kinds of things we want to put in front of people so that it's a tool for you to share with others. The second point is that you can teach your kids songs you want them to grow old with. Now, I know for you that are grandparents, you may not, or those of you that are empty nesters, maybe your kids aren't in your home, but there's a way that you can shape them, and we want to help you do that. And so looking at the website, looking at the sing page, I'm going to put some links up there about, there's actually some interesting conversion charts that can take, if your grandkids are into, I don't know, Miley Cyrus, who's the Christian version of that? So that you can help them understand. Because again, if you go back to the last week and the week before, it's this idea of what we put inside ourselves, what we eat is what we are. And so how do we lean into that? I want you to talk about what you're doing and what the songs mean, you know, these moments. And so as we've tried to lean in, I mean, even the song that we sang this morning, I don't know if you listen to those words deeply, but those of you, particularly in the choir, of understanding what does it mean to be a disciple of Christ? There's all these things. And even the songs that we sang, the new song we learned last week, and we sang again this week about faith, about how as children of God, we're going to stand, we're going to lean into the same tradition that goes back to the beginning of our storytelling. And that what it does is that it actually prepares us for the Sunday gathering. If there's songs that we're singing together, they can actually help us lean into what we will experience as we lean into the week together and as we come together in worship. And then number five is, you know, that it will help us model passionate participation in the gathering. There's nothing worse than people not singing. Now, there's a responsibility on Sheila and I, as particularly as we lead in this area of our music, to try to find those things. And so I want to stretch you. At the same time, I don't want to lose, like even this morning, this amazing hymn called Be Thou My Vision. And at the same time, to step into by faith, how we need both of those. And we cannot lose the great hymns of our faith, the things that we've grown up on, how important those are to us. And then also to help you as grandparents and even parents, be aware of all the music your kids are into. And at the same time, number seven, if your kids are into music, encourage them. But encourage them to help understand, because there's so many choices out there. We want to try to help you do that. So again, on the webpage, I'm going to be adding to that over the next couple weeks even. And then number eight, and you've done this amazingly, I think, in a church that's trying to go into the fast forward in the future, is to support our singing programs. The choir and other aspects of our worship ministry, I mean, those things are massive in terms of helping us sort of join together. And then the last two points are that we need to, and I think you do this well, cultivate high opinions of all types of art. Not just singing, but the visual arts. And so Nikki's trying to be very intentional with, you know, what we put on the screen and trying to make it so it's pleasing to you and that it helps you engage in worship. Now, it may be not what you're used to. At the same time, it's like, can you find in that some commonality that can help draw you in? And so this idea, the final point is you need to sing today. I mean, so when we offer these songs and we're trying to get better with that, how important that is to our faith journey together. Now, I want to drill down, just as since we're here for the annual, today for the annual meeting, just a couple more points. So our mission statement, our vision statement is that we're going to love God, love others, and with no limits. Can you say that with me? Or I could have Nikki stand up, and she's got the wonderful church T-shirt on that says that. Oh, we need to get new ones now because we added two words. And those the last two words, no limits, came from when we gathered with your session and some leaders back in November. Now, out of that gathering, one of the things that I've talked about, but I want you to see it in writing, is this next statement. Okay, we read through a book by Tony Morgan, who is a former church pastor and is just doing some amazing things to help churches get unstuck. And in that book, Tony says this, when a church tries to reach everyone, they will rarely connect with anyone effectively. And then we drilled down, he sort of had some verbiage in there, but he basically says this, if your music, environments, and ministries and other programming make young adults happy, you will reach young adults and many middle-aged and older adults. Because those of us that are middle-aged, and I think I'm on the other side of that, because if I'm 60, you know, I guess that's the other side, right? I'm tipping towards. The idea is that, and this is why Melinda and I go to Passion every year and serve with these kids. And we were just talking on the way over this morning, and there was one song, and it was crazy how they did it in this arena, and they actually had three venues going, and they had these rappers on stage, and they were all wired in together, and we were watching people in Atlanta. We were in Atlanta downtown. We're watching people out on the north side of Atlanta with people in Washington, D.C., and to be honest, I couldn't hear half the words. And I didn't care, because what I watched is 33,000 students, young adults, who were trying to figure out how to love Jesus better. Now, not my cup of tea, not my kind of music, but I'll tell you what, as they're trying to lean into their faith journey in a culture that isn't very supportive of that and is very antithetical to that, I'm going to take joy in that. And I need you to take joy in that too. And so as we lean through even the things we're trying to do in the church, but see, the reality is for us as a church is that even this year, we really are at a place where I really have to go back to that prayer or that statement from Joseph to say, I can't do it. I, as a pastor, I can't lead well enough. There isn't enough that I can offer in terms of time. That this really is about something that God has to do. And that we as Christ followers and as the church, we need to help you do that. And so one of the things you're going to hear about here in about a month is we're going to step into a 40-day campaign. And I know we've done this before as a church. You've been involved in it, maybe even in another church here in our community. But Saddleback has a new 40-day journey that's based on prayer. And I really think that the season that we are in, that there isn't any program we can offer that's cool enough. There isn't anything that we can do that will connect people until we really have the God of the universe who created people in our community till we petition him. And so the journey that you're going to be invited into is in a very intentional journey during Lent starting on I work with me. We've got a meeting after worship today with some folks to say, can we do this? And I'm thinking we're going to launch on March 4th. And the idea would be to do one event here at the church on March 4th where we would all gather and lean through the first of 6 weeks. And then what I need you to do is make the commitment that over the next 6 weeks, come hell or high water, you will be part of a small group where you will intentionally pray for the life of the church. That's the only way we're going to move from where we are to where we need to be. It's the only way that God is going to show up, because it's not about programs. It's not about money in the offering plate. It's not about any of that stuff. It's about where you are, more particularly where you are, each of us individually, in your spiritual relationship with Christ. Because we can't offer anything to the community if it isn't bleeding out of us. And we can come up with all sorts of ideas, and this church has an amazing history, not just, I mean, is Linden Road, but if you go back to when it was First United Pres downtown and the roots that we come from. And so I just believe we're in a season that's challenging us. And God is saying to us, okay, you're going to have to get a little more uncomfortable with what I want to do because you're not there yet. Now, you need to know it's going to be revealed in the annual meeting that as a church, financially, we're right on the edge. Now, part of that, and I'm humbled in this because as we talked about this at the finance committee, as we talked about this in terms of our future with the session, is that I am here because there was a handful of you that realized you were at a wall and you started praying. And what happens is we get comfortable with the action from that, and then we go back to our routine. And as I've shared with the session and with others of you, there was times when I first arrived here, there was always a handful of people who were up here who were gathering after the service to pray for each other, to pray for our community, for our mission. And until we return to that, I don't think God's going to bless us. I think what's going to happen is we're going to continue to get smaller. You're going to get to a point, and when you're about there now, where what you want to resource, you can't resource because it's not in the budget. And then you're going to have to make some harder choices about whether or not you have the ability to lean into what it's going to take to retool. Now, Jesus changed the world with 12, actually with 11, if you take Judas out. And we have much more than that. But so I really think as a church, we need to lean into a season of intentionality and really be focused on it. And realize that by saying that, first of all, as I say to many in conversations in other ways, but the idea is going to require more out of you. It's going to require your schedule. It's going to require you to be inconvenient. Now, what's interesting, just to show you inconvenience in one way. So these 50 men I was with yesterday, they covenanted together that over the next 3 months, every Thursday night at 9 p.m., these men are going to gather and pray for their church. Now, that's crazy. That's crazy because it's crazy inconvenient, because it's crazy because I know some of these guys and their bedtime is 8:30. You follow me? But they are committed that if they want to be the church in the community that they want to be, that's the kind of inconvenience it's going to take. And they also know that it's going to take an inconvenience of finances. Now, one of the things that I've seen over the last couple of years here, as you've walked with me, as we've moved from this idea of stewardship to generosity, and those are similar terms, but the idea of what you've done as an outpost has been amazing, I think, especially these last 2 years, because you have increased your generosity. Those of you that give on a regular basis, you've increased that. And when the needs have come, you've increased that. And so, but see, that's not enough, because you see, we need to be bringing new people into this fold. Not just because we want people in the pews, because the message that we have to offer a community is this idea of liberty in Jesus. That in their brokenness and in their failings and their faults, there's actually an opportunity that they can find a place in God's story. And they can help us do that. We can help them do that. That together we can actually repurpose our mission. And you need to know that, again, I say this, but everyone is pushing through this that's in church today. Because what worked 5 years ago is not working now. And so in a season of prayer, and I'm prayerful that over the course of our Lenten journey together, as we pray together in small groups, as we walk through a study, it's like, I don't know about prayer. That's dangerous stuff because I don't know how to pray. Well, just trust me that if you're willing to lean into it, and if you'll commit yourself to being part of that journey, And we're going to try to figure out how to make it so that you can be part of it, because I know even in this little place, the schedules are just complicated. And so we have to figure out how to create life within that. And you've heard me say this before, but we need to be understanding that life change doesn't come here on Sunday morning. And I heard this analogy yesterday, was talking with some guys. Actually, I had heard it earlier last week, and I thought that was an interesting tension as I talked to some guys. I said, what do you think about this as an analogy for the church? It's like, well, it could be kind of interesting. So it's like, think of the church being a restaurant. And this restaurant is really here to service the community in an amazing way, to offer an amazing fare. And as Christ followers, we get to come in and we get to literally dine with each other, both literally and figuratively. But then really what this church is supposed to be is more like a commissary for food trucks that we send out every week. Because you're in relationship with people outside this building who need to know and be encouraged in the faithfulness of who Jesus is. Because again, that song, those deep words, as I found that song, this idea of the liberty that comes in knowing who Jesus is, that he can actually change our lives in a way that we can actually then, through the overflow of what God is doing in us, we can actually offer it to people around us that are broken and disconnected. People who desperately need to know that God delights in them, that no matter what choices they've made as a person, that God forgives them, that God sends to them Jesus, and that Jesus on the cross and through the resurrection and the power of that we celebrate here in just a few weeks is a reminder of what we get to live in every day. And so as his people, we need to be in that. And yet it's going to be what I call messy, because it's going to play with our time and our schedule. It's going to play with our resources of in the schedule. It's going to play with our financial resources. But you know what? It's not our problem. It's God's problem. I mean, God has told us that if we will seek his face, he will be faithful to fulfill what is his destiny through us. Now, this journey we're in right now, I didn't sign on for these kind of complications, to be quite honest. I want to lead from a place of abundance and overflow. And it really does steal my heart when it's all I have to think about is, how do we do this and what bills are we going to pay? And yet, and every time over the last 3 years, particularly in the last 6 months, where I've seen God show up, is in a way where he's like, okay, this is going to happen, but you just need to be faithful, and you can't do it by yourself. That's the element that we need to see, is that we have to do this together. And that we have a tremendous opportunity to a community around us to offer the opportunity of life that comes in Jesus. And so with that, let me pray, and then we'll move into the rest of our morning together. I mean,